You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Bertolt Sabalek.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, July 5th, 2016.
And I think that's something that we want to extend to the community, is to bridge that gap and make it more comfortable for members of the LGB community to interact with the police department.
The Bloomington Police Department has a new LGBTQ liaison. More on that later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these headlines.
A new state law regulating the storage and use of footage from police body cameras has some police departments questioning whether they want to use body cameras at all. The Jeffersonville and Clarksville police recently announced they were discontinuing their use of body cameras due to concerns about the cost of digital storage. The police chief in Jeffersonville also cited the law's new requirements covering who's allowed to view the footage. Attorneys, family members, and property owners automatically have the right to view footage from police body cameras, but only in locations staffed by police personnel. Jeffersonville police first began using the body cameras in 2014. Here in Monroe County, Sheriff Brad Swain says the department isn't having any problems storing the footage, even with 30 deputies wearing cameras.
Their cameras are downloaded in a docking station, and we require them to do that on a regular basis in the event anything might happen to the camera, that the data isn't lost. We had one deputy take a spill into a creek. That's just kind of things that are going to happen in this line of work. And they download on a regular basis every day or so. It just depends on what they have going on. The attitude of our IT department is simply that if we need to get more space, we'll just get more space. Our system is programmed to delete after the required days. It automatically deletes a majority of those. So the storage at this point is not an issue for us.
The Monroe County Sheriff's Department began using body cameras late last year, while the Bloomington Police has been using them since 2014. Sheriff Swain says that despite initial reluctance, deputies accepted the body cameras after observing their advantages in the field.
The deputies have accepted them. Of course, there was a little bit of reluctance with some at the beginning, but pretty much within a week or so of the implementation, the body cameras were actually exonerating deputies against false claims from people. And across the country, that's where the program is won over the rank and file, is, you know, 99% or a large percent of the time, these recording, having the body camera, is exonerating officers against false claims. There is a lot of support for that, and also that you see that the behavior of other people changes when they know they're being recorded. So a lot of times that reduces the level of potential violence when that subject knows that judges and other people will be witnessing their conduct. And it alters the behavior of the officers as well. They know they can just remain in a professional manner and they're going to be the one that looks better on the interaction.
Much of the research on body cameras supports Sheriff Swain's claims. A 2014 report from the Justice Department analyzed body camera programs from several police departments around the U.S. and the U.K. and found that the cameras decreased use of force by police. They also found that citizen complaints declined dramatically when cameras were used, and that violence against police officers was also reduced. Media organizations and activists have criticized the new Indiana law for limiting the public's access to footage that may show police misconduct. The law gives departments the discretion to decide whether releasing body camera footage would serve the public interest or cause harm to involved parties, and they can deny access based on that judgment. Any organization denied access to the footage would then have to incur the expense of filing a lawsuit in court.
Emergency personnel responded to a life alert notification yesterday, which later led to an arrest for attempted murder. According to a statement from Bloomington Police, 19-year-old Zachary M. Zweiler was charged with attempted murder and criminal confinement after he allegedly attempted to murder his grandmother. At 11:54 p.m., ambulance personnel responded to a life alert notification from the residents. The personnel then contacted police when they heard yelling. The 86-year-old woman was found by police lying on the ground and covered in blood. The victim said her grandson, M. Zweiler, beat her and attempted to strangle her without provocation. When police found M. Zweiler at the residence, M. Zweiler allegedly began fighting with officers. He was covered in blood and denied having knowledge of the victim's injuries. The victim was transported to IU Methodist Hospital due to the extent of her injuries, which included face and upper body lacerations and contusions. M. Zweiler has been booked at the Monroe County Jail.
The Bloomington City Council is scheduled to discuss a controversial plan for an electrical substation again next week. The council meets on Wednesday, July 13th at 7:30 p.m. Last week, the council heard a second round of public comments on the Duke Energy substation to be built at the northwest corner of 11th and Rogers Streets. Council member Chris Sturbaum said that while the city and Duke had been in talks for a while, more time was still needed. Area residents have complained that the substation could be unsightly and noisy.
So the administration on Monday had a meeting with a council representative, which was myself, and three Duke representatives. And we talked and discussed in good faith the ideas of surrounding the substation with a wall and the possibility of creating liner buildings. And it was clear that everyone needed more time to digest that and to get that worked out. So there's no certainty of what Duke will do, but they are negotiating in good faith, and we will be talking over this two-week period, and I'll be reporting to council and neighborhoods. So this gives us time as a community to try and work this out.
IU economist and Maple Heights resident Joanna Voronkowitz said Maple Heights and the Near West Side are rare in that residents can walk or bike to access the city's urban assets. She expressed concern that the substation would impact the neighborhood's ability to keep residents in the long term.
The way to keep these people living in these neighborhoods permanently and not renting houses and being more temporary residents and turning over is to give them a better quality of life that doesn't include things like a substation that will have these negative impacts, visual, auditory, etc.
Voronkowitz added that reworking the design may come at a high price, but she encouraged officials to see it as a long-term investment instead of focusing on the short-term costs.
The City Council has approved extending the expiration date of the Bloomington Urban Enterprise Zone to January 31, 2018. The zone was originally created in 1992. The city's Assistant Director of Small Business Relations, Jason Carnes, said programs delivered through the Bloomington Urban Enterprise Association, or BUEA, would improve economic development in the Urban Enterprise Zone.
In addition, the BUEA has created several local programs that further the BUEA's mission to provide the means to improve economic, physical, and social environment for zone residents and businesses. These local programs include the Entrepreneurial Support and Technical Assistance Program, Historic Facade Preservation Grants, Zone Arts Grants, Business Economic Enhancement Scholarship Program, the Resident Economic Enhancement Scholarship Program, and Rehabilitation Direct Loan Program. In addition to these local programs, the BUEA has also given funds to other organizations as special project grants to help meet community needs. A few examples of these are school grants that we give to the Monroe County Community School Foundation to help schools located in the zone with various programs. Shalom Community Center, recently we gave them two large grants to help them take over the services that were provided by the former Martha's House. And we gave funds to the Boys and Girls Club to help them with their new facility in the Crestmont area.
Councilmember Sternbaum inquired about the possibility of the association investing in the Trades District, which is located inside the Urban Enterprise Zone. Carnes said money has already been dedicated in the association budget for investment in the Trades District. Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked Carnes if the association could help pay for improvements to the design of the proposed Duke substation, proposed to be located at the northwest corner of 11th and Rogers.
I don't know why we couldn't, unless there was some sort of restriction in place, but as far as I know, we would be able to do that as a special program grant.
Councilmember Allison Chopra said using the association funds to improve the substation site would be a, quote, perfect use of those funds, unquote, since businesses in that area already pay into the zone.
Monroe County Auditor Steve Salter is set to officially resign next Friday after 7.5 years working for the county. Following the recent illness and death of his wife, Salter, who is a Democrat, told the Herald Times that he decided not to run again for auditor, but he says he didn't want to quit until he saw the purchase of a new financial software package approved. That approval occurred last week. Salter's tenure as auditor was marked by an investigation by a special prosecutor regarding the misuse of an office credit card last year. That investigation is ongoing. That prompted a group of Republicans to call for his resignation. Chief Deputy Auditor Therese Chambers will head the office until a replacement is found. The Democratic Party will have to hold a caucus within 30 days after Salter's departure to find someone to finish his term. Then, in the November election, three candidates are set to seek his position. They are Republican Ann Boehm, Democrat and current County Treasurer Kathy Smith, and Chambers, who's going to run as an independent. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Bertolt Sabalik. Detective Sergeant Dana Cole and Sergeant David Alley have been appointed to lead the new LGBTQ liaison initiative from the Bloomington Police Department. According to a press release, the LGBTQ liaison program is meant to foster positive relationships and build communication between the police department and the LGBTQ community. Earlier today, Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn spoke with Sergeant Cole about the liaison program for today's community report.
This is Sarah Vaughn reporting for WFHB. I'm speaking with Detective Sergeant Dana Cole, who's part of the newly established LGBTQ liaison program. Sergeant Cole, can you tell us why create a liaison program?
Well, I actually had brought this up to the administration earlier this year. And, you know, with Bloomington having a large population of LGBT individuals, I felt that, you know, looking at other larger police departments around the country that have programs like this, that, you know, this is something that Bloomington definitely should be a part of in the police department. And, you know, as myself being a member of this community, you know, I started talking with the administration about the creation of this. And so it's been in the works for quite a while, and we actually got to the point to release and announce it now.
How many gay or lesbian police officers does the Bloomington Police Department currently employ?
Currently, I think there's 7 lesbian or gay officers that are open that we know about. So, you know, we have a 100-man department. So, you know, that's pretty good statistics for a police department.
Have you seen an increase in hate crimes against gays, lesbians, and trans people in Bloomington?
I have not. You know, I've been a part of the Bloomington Police Department now for 12 years, and that's actually something that drew me to this community. I didn't grow up here in Bloomington, but I lived in northern Indiana, and researching, I found that, you know, Bloomington is probably the most open and accepting community in this state. And, you know, as being a gay police officer, that's one of the factors that drew me here to the Bloomington Police Department.
What are the main concerns of the LGBTQ community, and what programs or resources do you hope to be able to extend to them?
Well, you know, starting out here, we're going to reach out to the local groups. We've actually been in contact with the Bloomington Pride group, and we're planning on having a booth at the Pride Summerfest coming up. And then, you know, one of the things that we're going to offer during the Summerfest is we're going to have a probably about a 45-minute to an hour self-defense seminar, where some of our instructors from the police department will be giving instructions on how to defend yourself. And then we're just looking to make contact with the other groups around town. I know that IU has a campus pride, so we're going to, you know, reach out to them and, you know, try to go to some of their student meetings and just be available to hear any concerns or complaints that the community has. And then, you know, basically we want to be a resource and also foster a better relationship. I wouldn't say there's any type of bad relationship, but there's definitely a need to create a stronger relationship with the LGBT community.
If someone from the LGBT community has a complaint about an interaction they've had with the police, how is that handled?
Any member of the community, if they have a complaint, they can call in and talk with a supervisor, and we actually have a complaint process that they can, you know, file a complaint, and it's looked at by the administration. Also, with the creation of the liaison program here, you know, if there is a member of the LGBT community that would prefer to talk to a gay or lesbian officer, that can be arranged.
What background or experience do you and Sergeant Alley have that make you a good fit for this liaison role?
You know, Sergeant Alley and myself both are gay males in this community. Both have lived here for numerous years, and, you know, we have got an extensive network of friends in the LGBT community already. So I think that understanding what members of the LGBT community go through, you know, I've grew up in northern Indiana, and, you know, I can say that working in another police department that, you know, it's not always the most friendly atmosphere, and it's not open, and that's something that, you know, we try, the Bloomington Police Department does an excellent job. I mean, like I said, you know, we have a large, open, gay and lesbian police officers force here, and you know, I have never had an issue with anybody within the department treating me differently, and I think that's something that, you know, we want to extend to the community, is to bridge that gap and make it more comfortable for members of the LGBT community to interact with the police department. And then, you know, I also have goals of, you know, getting members of the community to come in and do some diversity training for the officers. So it's going to work both ways. You know, the community is going to help the police department, and hopefully, you know, we will be able to help the community also.
Have you yourself experienced any kind of harassment or discrimination because of your status as a gay police officer or a gay male somewhere outside of Bloomington, like when you were living in other parts of the state?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I definitely, you know, as a young college student in northern Indiana, you know, I wasn't always open and as free with my sexuality as I am now. And, you know, entering the police field, you know, individuals had found out, coworkers had found out that I was a gay male and had made comments and stuff and, you know, made it uncomfortable for me. So, yes, I have had that in the police field outside of Bloomington. And, you know, that's something for me that I definitely want to, if I can, across the state, make young gay and lesbian officers feel comfortable and be open, be proud about who they are, and not have coworkers, you know, intimidate them.
Do you feel that having LGBTQ officers, that the LGBT community will feel more comfortable in reporting crimes when they happen?
Yeah, I do feel that you know, as time goes on and we foster a good relationship with the community, I think that in return, where individuals now don't feel comfortable coming forward and reporting that, I think once they know that, you know, the Bloomington Police Department has a number of LGBT officers and that we are making an effort to have a more positive relationship with the community, I think that's going to in turn make individuals feel more comfortable to come forward to report crimes that have been committed against them, because there's for sure crimes, harassment, and hate crimes that are occurring in Bloomington, but I think a large portion of those are being underreported.
This is Sarah Vaughn for WFHB speaking with Detective Sergeant Dana Cole about the newly created LGBTQ liaison program in the Bloomington Police Department.
That was Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaking with Detective Sergeant Dana Cole about the Bloomington Police Department's new LGBTQ liaison program announced today.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hello, and welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money. It's me, Christina, with the It's Your Money Project. If you have a teenager at home, you know that money can be an issue of major contention between you and them. But as a parent, you are your child's most influential role model, particularly when it comes to managing finances. So what are you teaching them, and how are you teaching it? Here are some tips for teaching teens how to manage their money the smart way. Start with teaching kids to keep a budget. For teenagers, a monthly allowance as opposed to a weekly or daily one might be a good idea to consider. It encourages them to make their money last throughout the month, and a written budget can really help with that. Start by helping your teen write down everything they spend their money on for a few weeks, then organizing those expenditures into categories like food, clothing, and entertainment. Seeing where their money goes gives a realistic idea of where they need to be more disciplined in their spending. It's also a great time to encourage them to put aside a portion of their money as savings. Another lesson in budgeting may be to let your teen plan a family vacation or day out within an amount set by you. Looking at the price of tickets, gas, and lunch, and whatever else, they'll get experience with real-world financial decision-making they can use as adults, and they might even gain an appreciation for the effort you put into those days of carefree fun they enjoy. And of course, there are lots of technology-based approaches to learning how to budget. There are also a number of tools and games online that can teach your kids skills about how to budget, build passive income, and balance expenditures and investments over time. Of course, the best lessons in managing money come when that money has been earned, not just distributed as an allowance. If your teen is old enough, encourage them to get a part-time job, whether that's working for you at home or working at a local store or restaurant. A job allows them to learn all sorts of valuable skills like time management, budgeting, saving, paying for yourself, and even doing tax returns. More experts are now recommending actually allowing your teenager to have a credit card. If you do that, be careful. You want a credit card to be a learning tool, not to be seen as a magical source of unlimited spending power. But you might be thinking, wait, if I have to co-sign for my under 18 child to get a credit card, that means my credit score would be linked to their learning curve. No thanks. Well, it's true. You do have to be vigilant about when the card is handed over and what it can be used for. But this can be a really important learning experience. And you can help them understand things like how expensive it is in the long run to pay only the minimum amount due each month. And they also get a head start on establishing a good credit history. Just to be safe, though, you want to minimize potential collateral damage during this exercise by making sure you ask for a low credit limit, like $200 or $300. Want to start your kids on the smart money path even earlier? You can initiate the concept of savings with kids younger than teens by allowing them to start small amounts of money doing various tasks and chores at home. They can put what they earn in a piggy bank, or better yet, into a clear jar so they can watch their savings pile up. Another idea for kids of any age? Teach them how to save money at the grocery store, and also how to see the real cost of items. Show your kids the tags that state the price per unit so that kids can learn the real cost of items, regardless of package size and marketing. Older kids can keep a running total on a calculator as you fill your cart. Personal finance experts agree. It's never too late to start teaching money lessons to your kids. Younger kids who learn simple money concepts will grow into teenagers who are ready for more financial responsibility and into adults who are better prepared for the challenges of managing their money in the real world.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producer is Joe Crawford, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library, .info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Casey Ross, Kathy Norton, and Jared Dill, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsey. It's part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Jennifer Brooks. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Bertolt Sobolik.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.